everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are here at Reverse Thieves, and you can contact us in my attempt at an ASMR voice.
I was going to say, that's what it sounded like.
At reversethieves@gmail.com. Also, if you
would... Stop it.
If you would like to... Also, give us show suggestions or make any comments or make corrections or just tell us to keep on going, then you can pop in on our Discord. We have a section for One Piece. We have a section for conventions. And we could even make a new section if you have something that's cool or sexy.
Not sexy. Nope. And you can get to the Discord via reversethieves.com or in all the show notes for each episode of the podcast. There's also a link.
And this is pretty much our end of the year podcast. It is not our year in review. That is for anyone who is not a regular listener. That is always our January podcast. This is just a little bit of a wind down. We will be talking a little bit about stuff we have watched that's not anime, but our general feelings about, you know, the best of the year will be in January.
I don't like to be rushed. I love a year-end list, but I feel rushed because there are shows to still finish. There are shows that aren't even finished yet. As we're recording this on December 13th, there's shows that are not over, so I don't know how I feel about them.
I could really sour on Dr. Stone in this list.
Yep.
I could be like,
change everything.
Fear in no way.
Yep.
Bad show now.
Spy Family out the door.
Yeah, I think you mean Anya show.
Yeah. So, as Al said, we'll be talking a little bit about Anime Secret Santa. We'll be talking about the JoJo's live action movie that was heavily requested by our listeners. And we'll be talking about our favorite things that are not anime and manga. And since some of you in the Discord have never heard of things that aren't anime and manga, this will be a revelation for you. But first,
we have the Typhoon Minute. I was like, man, I remember last month, I was like, there's probably not going to be a lot of news. And then the minute I said there'll probably be a lot of news, but if not, there'll be a lot of news in January. Well, there was a lot of news this month. The first thing that is interesting is that the fan-made English patch for Fate Extra CCC came out. Now, Fate Extra was localized here in the US. And then the sequel game to that was Fate Extra CCC that never get translated. And then the games after that, that are all in the same timeline and the same story, the Fate Extella games, both of those were translated. So it was this weird thing that Fate Extra CCC never came out here. And what's also weird is that a lot of that lore and stuff ties into Fate Grand Order. So they're currently remaking Fate Extra with the general plans, as long as Fate Extra Record, as it's called, doesn't fail, they would also remake CCC. Because they're both, the original games came out on the PSP, which is generally considered not a, not a system that people play anymore, but since those games are kind of integral to the plot of Fate Grand Order, they're like remaking them. So my original plan was to just play Fate Extra Record and then hope that they had the CC and play it that way. But now, if you want, there is the option to play Fate Extra CCC. You have to either have a modified Vita or you have to... you have to have a modified original PSP or have a way of emulating it. But it is now available as an option. I'm a little like, do I want to like download an emulator and play it on my laptop? Or do I want to just wait for the remakes? I will determine that as I go. But it's nice to know that is there if you don't mind playing fan translations. There were two Fate Grand Order events this month. The one we have seen, which is Guda Guda Super Goryo Kaku, which is once again another combination of Meiji Revolution characters, along with, you know, what's the, like, Nobunaga, like, unifying Japan called?
Is that the Warring State
period? Yeah, Warring States.
Is that right?
Yeah. Or is that Romance of the Three Kingdoms era stuff?
No,
I think that's, I think you're right. I think it's Warring States. Yeah, but just because they're always combination of those two. Because the three new big servants are Takeda Shingen, who is a Warring States character, and then Kenshin, Usagi Kenshin. Not the Kenshin manga, like the Kenshin that Kenshin is named after, who is also like a famous Warring States general. They got like a 5-star ruler version. But then Nagakura Shinpachi is a Shinsengumi member, which is from, you know, the Meiji Revolution. He's, you know, he's a Shinsengumi member.
So despite what you said, a lot of Kenshin references there.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, but he's an actual, you know, historical character from the Shinsengumi. Like, Kenshin is supposed to be like an amalgamation of about several assassins for the Ishin Patriots. Kenshin is a popular character, so people were excited to get a ruler version of them. And that was a fun event. And there's also going to be a Christmas event that was announced this week. It was announced, they were both announced together, but we know that there's going to be no new 5-star, it'll just be old 5-stars, and that the only new character, and the only new character for the rest of the year, will be this mysterious free servant that we're getting for the event, which looks like it's going to be some kind of Nero Santa, like Captain Nemo. I'm sorry, not Nero, Nemo. Nemo, some kind of Captain Nemo Santa version.
I was going to joke that, like, oh, is it somebody with, like, a red suit and a big beard? But I guess I was right.
Every time they have a Christmas event, it's some Santa variation of a existing Fate character. And the last one was the first time they had a male, which was Santa Carna. And now it's Santa Nemo. So it's not just girls. They have now 2 years in a row. Well, they took a year off. They did something else for Christmas last year. But the last two Santas have been male Santas. Carna now, probably Captain Nemo. And the only other thing I wanted to mention was that when they announced both the Guda Guda and the Christmas event, Nasu did a blog post on his blog, and he mentioned that, one, despite people's speculation, the Christmas event would not have any Tsuhime characters because Ark, the main vampire, her birthday is Christmas. So a lot of people were wondering if Nasu was going to write the Christmas event, would it be Tsuhime themed? He's like, no, don't get that in your heads. Don't, like, this is not the last of Tsuhime in Fate Grand Order, but do not expect a Tsuhime Christmas. But what I thought was really interesting is he did essentially, if anybody remembers the old part of the blog that nobody ever understood, ongoing investigations, when we talked about what we're reading, watching, and playing. He did that, and he recommended some stuff that I just thought was interesting. The manga he recommended was Boku ga Koi Suru Cosmic Star, which was seemed very Lum-like to me, of like, you know, like an alien comes to live with a boy. The anime, which I surprised he was watching, is Scott Pilgrim. And the game that came out on Steam that he's been playing is Sanabi, which is kind of like a dystopian cyberpunk, like, side-scroller.
I just assumed you were going to say Baldur's Gate 3, because I thought every person, like, seems to be playing that one, but maybe he didn't feel like that needed to be called out.
I was going to mention, but I might as well mention here, that, like, one of the, I can't recommend it because I haven't played it, but I someone in my family specifically was like, oh, what do you want for Christmas? I'm like, you know what? Give me Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, awesome!
Because, like...
I haven't played it either, obviously.
But a friend of ours who we played D&D with recommended highly. I see all these videos. They won Game of the Year at the Game Awards. Like, there's literally people are petitioning games they made, changes they made to the D&D system in the game people want in the actual, like, tabletop game. Because, like, you know, there's some rules that just work better in a video game. But, like, some people are like, no, these are rules that actually would work better in the tabletop. You know, this one's obviously for the game, but take this one, and that one. Like, take out monk's work here, and this one over here. And, like, so, yeah, no, it was a big surprise. So, I have not played Baldur's Gate 3, but I've specifically asked it for it for Christmas so that I can play it next year and, you know, see what all the love is about.
So that was a spoiler about what's not on our list at the end of this episode. But before we get to all of that, I think I'm not participating in Anime Secret Santa this year, but Al is.
So, I was given, I don't know who my Secret Santa is, but I was given basically three Osamu Dezaki choices. And so, I'm going to try my best to knock out two of them. Kate lent me her copy of Aim for the Ace TV. And I'm going to try to do that. If worse comes to worse, I'm going to watch the Cobra movie, which I found a free site that has it. The only reason I haven't watched it yet is because my roommate keeps saying, oh, we should watch it together. Because one of the Hololive VTubers did a watch along. And so their watch along is, and he's like, we should watch it together with, like, I think it's Crony, but it might be somebody else. We should do the watch along. I'm like, all right. So I'm giving him time to, like, set a date where we watch this together. If not, I'll just watch it on my own. And then the third one was, like, Marine Express, but I just don't have the time to do all three of them, and that would require me to, like, download fan subs, which is hardly impossible, but I figured those two were good enough.
I mean, you don't have to do more than one. Yeah. So it's nice that you're even attempting to do two.
And so, yeah, the week, yeah, probably sometime next week, I'm guessing, that I'll make my determination if I've watched enough Aim of the Ace episodes or if I'm just going to watch Cobra. And then I will, on this podcast feed, I will put out my Secret Santa review of one or two of them, my choices.
So look for that a little bit after the release of this episode of the podcast. And now for the main event, which is, so a few months back for the anniversary of the podcast, we did a poll on the Discord asking for people to vote about which live action anime adaptation we would watch and review for the podcast. So we had five choices, and JoJo's Diamond is Unbreakable Chapter 1 is what won pretty handily, which I really appreciated that people didn't make me watch Bleach. So you could tell, I feel like that shows me that our listeners are not just in it for, like, my pain. That's what it told me. I thought you were all very good people. So this is a live-action movie that covers only part of the Diamond is Unbreakable story, and it came out in 2017. It was directed by Takashi Miike, who's a very prolific director, which means he does a lot of things, so, like, not all of them are good, necessarily. And I honestly have to say, I really went into this without knowing most of what I just told you, because I basically just knew, like, oh, there's a JoJo's Part 4 movie, and I was like, okay, let's watch that, not even realizing at that time that it didn't, like, attempt to cover, like, the whole story, or, like, you know, like, I didn't really know exactly what it was going to be.
But they clearly thought that this was going to be, like, a trilogy or something like that.
That's very, like, I guess it's, like, mistake number one was, that seems ambitious to me. Like, JoJo's is popular, but, like, is Part 4 and, like, a live-action version of it so popular that, like, you thought that was going to be so popular that you were going to do I don't feel like they could have covered it in two movies based on this movie. So I feel like it would have been at least three movies, I guess. I don't know. I feel like having watched it, I'm taking it as a blessing that we didn't get to Rohan, because I feel like I would have been really disappointed. Like, oh, Rohan's not in it. Well, okay, at least I don't have to deal with that.
Okay, if you always want disappointment, you can always watch that live action Thus Spoke Rohan Kishibe TV series.
I know, but see, at least it's a TV series, so I feel like maybe that's okay, because it has more space. It could still be awful. This movie, I was checking, it only covers the first, less than 20 chapters of this manga. And so the focus is really on the first, murder mystery sort of story in here, and then the brothers and the arrow story. So, you know, it doesn't have a really satisfying feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for anybody who has forgotten, parts 1, 2, and 3 are all about Dio, and with the Pillar Men in the middle. And that was generally supposed to be the original arc and where Araki originally had planned out. And so part 4 is kind of infamous for him figuring out where the rest of the series was going to go as he wrote it. So while part 4 is amazing, you definitely can tell at the beginning, he's like, what do I do now? And he kind of wanders around and eventually, makes Kira, the big bad guy and, focus of the plot. But it takes a little while to get there.
But I feel like, yeah, so weirdly, they decide to adapt all the chapters where, yeah, he's, mucking around quite a bit instead of really
jumping right to Kira in the
movie. Yeah, and just condensing the story, taking the essence. Mm-hmm. Of yes, the Kira serial killer story, that's the story, that's the villain. Sure, you're not going to be able to cover the entire story, but pick parts of that story and make that the story of this movie. And I feel like that could have worked, but they don't even attempt to do that. And it was just interesting to see what they, because they did take something, they did take some liberties. I wouldn't call this a straight adaptation, but at the same time, it felt like they didn't know what was important. Mm-hmm. It was the opposite of what they should have been doing, or it just felt like the focus was often oh, you're gonna pull in this element. They bring in, I forget her name, Koichi's a girlfriend. Mm-hmm.
Which, hair girl.
yeah, they introduce her into it very early on, and so you're like, oh, okay, well, they didn't want to they didn't want to have her just show up later, but then she's in it, but then there's nothing to do. I guess, again, that was just planning for the next movie, I suppose, but she doesn't really do anything in this movie, and is just, obviously, she's so weird that it's just, okay, that's really weird. Something weird's happening. Or, the story with the arrow. I had totally forgotten the whole part with the dad. And that part is so damn weird. And it is way weirder in live action even than, anime. You can do things that, you can't do in live action. And I felt like that was one of those moments where it was you don't even need this part of the story at all. This could completely have been cut so that you could really streamline this story of the brothers. I just felt like they didn't make good decisions, I think, in choosing what needed focus and what didn't, or what could go away.
Yeah, because it's weird because they bring up the dad enough to bring it up, but they don't bring up Dio and all that stuff, which is like if it was me, if I was going to streamline it, I would have just cut out the dad, and I just would have had the person going around with the arrow, who eventually gets the arrow, have Kira's dad, who's the atomic heart father, the weird guy in the picture, have him be the person going around with the arrow and making stand users to protect his son, which eventually happens in the story anyhow.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And just have the brothers be like one of the first people hit by the arrow and like recruited by Atomic Heart Father to like stop the JoJo's gang from getting to Kira.
That's a really good call. Yeah, I think that that would work. I also feel like the first mystery story with, like, the guy who
Angelo.
Gets... Yeah, is, like... I mean, maybe you could have made that the whole... Like, or that could have been Kira. Like, that should... Maybe that could have been Kira, you know? But, like, it just feels like that part is really slow. Then the stuff with the brothers is, like, truncated in a way that, like, makes it not impactful. And then, don't forget, we also have... You can't have this without Jotaro showing up. And then, like, everything with that is just, it just doesn't feel cohesive.
Like, the part that they do cut out is, at the end of the brothers' arc, this lightning guitarist guy kills one of the brothers and takes the arrow. And then when they defeat him, Kira's the one who gets the arrow, or Kira's dad. But, like, they cut him out and they just have Kira do that. But it's like...
But in the most hysterical way possible, you guys, the end of this movie, I just like burst out laughing. It was so hilarious and ridiculous.
If you want to put all of Diamond is Unbreakable in like two or three live action movies, you've got to cut more than just lightning rocker guy.
I agree. I feel like it could have been done, and obviously it would not be the same story. Mm-hmm. But it would be a version of the story that felt like a movie. You know, like, it would have the same feelings and beats or whatever, but it would be told very differently. Which is what I would expect, you know what I mean? I wouldn't expect a live action to just adapt it faithfully, so I don't know.
Because, yeah, it wouldn't also have been that hard, because, like, in the original, Angelo just has stand powers and is just messing around the city. In this one, they have the brothers make Angelo, which, you know, it's like, all right. That, like, just, once again, like I said, just have it all be Kara's dad and just...
And then it maybe could have been, like, two movies, I guess. Mm. Or it could still have been one movie. But, like, we discover that it's Kira. Like, it could have been, like, Jotaro and Josuke, like, discover that it's Kira's dad. And then the second half of the movie is, like, them pursuing Kira or whatever. Like, of course, I say that. Every time I say Kira, I just think Death Note immediately. Which still works. So yeah, I think just from a adaptation point of view, I just didn't really like the... just choices that they made. And then casting wise also, I felt like they really fell down on that. I think the only person I thought was like just good in general, I thought like Koichi was probably the standout, like both as like a character and like as an actor. I thought that he was like good, but it was like he probably should have been playing the lead character because he felt like he could have done it. And not that the lead character was awful, he wasn't. But I just didn't, like, buy into it and, like, the way that he expressed himself.
Yeah, like, he just kind of misses, like, the kind of Yankee charm that, like, what do you call it, our main JoJo was supposed to have.
And the same with Jotaro, who was, like, in the manga and in the original story... I guess because the original story is so long that, like, to me, Jotaro doesn't play this, like... pivotal role, but he's in the movie so much because we're only covering these like very early chapters where he shows up, and so I feel like that balance was also off. But I wasn't buying the casting for him at all. And were you the one telling me also about like the hilarious pictures of like how they did the hat for him in here? Because somebody was saying that, like, there were pictures, like, when they were doing this movie where they, like, shaved hair off so that, like, they could, like, put the hat on. So, like if he's not wearing the hat, it, like, looks really weird. But that actually reminds me that the costuming also, I feel like, was really falling down for me in this because... Like, there were some things that they were really faithful to, but then some things that they cheaped out on, and it's like, it's a JoJo's. I want it to be, like, very, like, colorful and, like, ridiculous, I guess. And the thing that made me really upset is, like, Okuyasu doesn't have, like, 1 billion yen, or whatever it says on the, like, whatever giant number it is that's supposed to be on the back of his you know, jacket is, like, not there. And I was like, what? You can make Jotaro's stupid hat, but you can't do this?
Well, look, okay, one of those is iconic and wonderful and necessary, and the other one's just, you know, what it is.
I think we might have different opinions on which is which. And then what about the fights, Al? Like the stand?
Trying to remember. I'd say, if nothing else, the first fight caught pretty well, like the back and forth decently well. Of like, you know, Angelo trapping them in the house and then...
No, all the water. Yeah.
I'd say... Because there were three main fights. There was the fight against Angelo, fight against Okuyasu, and then fight against Okuyasu's brother. The Okuyasu fight's pretty quick, so...
Not good. I did, the Okuyasu, like, just the characterization of him in this movie, I thought was not good at all.
And then, like, the fight against his brother was just, like, too much messaging.
And there's just a lot of talking, but, like, I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't, like, horrible.
Mm-hmm. But you understand why they are probably not going to make movie 2 and 3.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is, like, this movie didn't do well, so you're not going to get any more of it. And, like, honestly, I think that is a good decision because... Like, this is not the group to make this. And I'm just so curious, though, like, why part 4?
I mean, it was pretty, it was one of the more popular parts, so.
I love part 4, but, like, I don't know, I was just like, why start here? Like, why, I guess maybe it had just the, maybe that's when the anime was coming out or something. I don't know. It just felt like... I just don't know if JoJo's is built for live action, even with CG. Like...
I mean... Yeah, it is very interesting. I don't really have a good answer. I mean, I don't know. There is this idea that, like, live action movies are, like, where you prove that you're, you know, a real franchise or... I mean, but I feel like, you know, when, like, Jose gets adapted that way, you know, I feel like Jose is usually pretty more grounded, so, like...
Well, yeah, if you're doing, like, a contemporary story about regular life, sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean...
Unless this is someone's regular life. Was this just a film? This is a documentary? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, real-time documentary shot. A documentary shot in real time. I don't know. Like, I mean, Takashi Miike did, like, the Phoenix Wright movie, which I remember got very mixed opinions. Like, some people thought, like, this is probably the best you could have done in live action. And then other people were like, Stinky PU. I don't actually remember anybody's opinion on this one. So, I can't say what, like, other people said. Obviously, the box offices said what they had to say. I don't know. It always seems like a gamble. Like, for every, like, live-action One Piece, you'll get half a dozen, you know, other movies we could have picked on our list.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I do think of the list. I bet this was the best one.
Because it was live action Bleach, which is just...
I can only imagine that is truly, truly awful.
It was live action Attack on Titan.
Probably really bad.
What were the other ones? Or...
Dragon Ball Evolution.
Ooh, that one that one is, like, legendarily bad. That one you don't even have to...
And did we put Netflix One Piece on there, maybe? What did we put?
I don't remember. There were the other choices, yeah.
Yeah,
the so three that I remember were pretty dire.
This is probably as good as it was going to get. I do feel like just, but they keep making these things, right? So there has to be, like, some reason. I don't know, because I would say that, again, if adapting anime or manga that is not just, like, contemporary romance or something. So those aside, like, are these... I feel like the percentage of time that these are actually good has to be really low.
And then a lot of times, even the ones that are on the better side tend to be controversial of, like, you know, some people like, actually, I didn't think that was a bad adaptation. Other people like, that was stinky PU torture. I would rather, what do you call it, you know, drink my own urine for a month.
Oh, God, come on, Al.
Sorry.
Ugh. Yeah, like, I feel like the one that I can think of that I enjoyed was, like, the Death Note live action, but I think that's very not the Netflix one.
Okay.
The movies that they did like way back. I enjoyed those.
No, the Netflix one is infamous for being like
super, super bad. But yeah, I just like these like more out there ones. I'm just trying to think of like what's a good one.
Like, didn't I watched like a little bit when I came over to your house and you guys were finishing it up of that like Anime World Order where they looked at live action anime? Didn't they like the French City Hunter?
Yeah, that's supposed to be a lot of fun. But again, that seems like something that you could adapt, right? It's not like, I mean, it's very anime, but it's not like people with powers or like giant fighting monsters or like whatever. It's like a dude with a gun.
Like, Battle Angel Alita, people like that to a degree.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
That's the only one I can think of that like
tell us everyone. Yes. Tell us good ones again that are in the criteria of like shonen fighty or something like
or
that.
Or seinen fighty.
Yeah, but like
with powers and stuff and like, you know, like when you think of anime, not just anime, not, you know.
What about anime with a capital A?
As opposed to like if they had like I remember the one that everybody was kicking around and like had like Guillermo del Toro attached to it for a while, but like Monster. Like Monster wouldn't be that hard to like.
Right, exactly. Like it feels reasonable.
You know what would be really easy to do and would be so hard to fuck up, Kate?
Tell me.
Cowboy Bebop. You'd have to be an idiot to fuck that one up.
Well, it's a good thing we'll never find out.
Yeah.
So would you review something that the viewers, listeners, would you review something that the listeners picked for us again?
Yeah, they didn't seem malicious, so like
was a test.
I feel like since they didn't pick Bleach, like I have a little faith in our listeners to like not like pick the choice they're actually interested in, not the choice that would make us suffer the most.
So maybe we will do this again in a future, on a future episode. So thanks everybody for voting. We really appreciate it. It was really fun to like have a poll and like do something this way. And let us know in Discord. If you watched this movie, I would also be curious what you thought of it. I don't recommend watching it. If
I thought it was better than the original Diamonds Unbreakable. It's actually
no.
Definitive. You're like, get out of my Discord.
I don't have to worry about that happening. All right. So the second half of the podcast, we are going to just take a little bit of time to talk about some non-anime and manga favorite things from 2023. So, all right. I want you. So, Al and I don't know each other's list because I was like, I want to be surprised. So, I don't know how many you have.
I picked 3. I figured one of ours would overlap.
Interesting.
How many did you pick?
Well, I could do 5.
That's fine.
But I don't necessarily have to. So, we'll see. We'll see. I'm now interested in what you think is going to overlap. So, all right, should I go first?
Let me go first just to see if it's
the overlap.
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
I thought we were both gonna pick what do you call it? Beyond the Spider-Verse?
What the hell is it called? Spider-Verse 2, guys.
I'm gonna look it up.
Okay.
I refuse to not. Across the Spider-Verse. So Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I thought it would be on both of our lists.
It is not on my list.
Interesting.
But it's a great choice.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, huge hit. Like,
amazing.
We both really liked it. Like, it was a movie that inspired, like, basically animators everywhere. Like, after that movie came out, you were not surprised by like American animators being like, oh, and I watched, or like, I was inspired by Into the Spider-Verse. But what I found fascinating was when we went to conventions that year, and then even since then, the number of Japanese animators or people in the animation industry who were in, like, I saw Into the Spider-Verse and it blew my mind and like got me thinking, and like, or like anime of the year or animated thing of the year. Was like really surprising the number of people who brought up Into the Spider-Verse. So like crazy. Just major influential. So, you know, the only problem is, you know, sure, you're groundbreaking on your first one, but, you know, when you make the second one, is it just going to be, that was more of the same, or, you know, it was good, but, you know, it's not like the impact that the, you know, the first one had. And so, like, I feel like even if it wasn't overtly said, that was a thought in a lot of people's heads. And, you know, I think that the second movie, like, lived up to the, you know, the first movie and, like, you know, did a little more. And I think it was really interesting. I think it was, you know, it built on stuff that happened in the first one, kind of expanded the universe, kind of, like, took what people liked about the first
one. The Spider-Verse, you mean?
Yes. And, you know, and expanded a lot of those ideas and, like, brought in new stuff. I apparently was, like, the only person who went into that movie not realizing that it was supposed to be part two of three.
No, I had that. I had that happen, too.
And so I was like, oh, three movies, crazy. Because I was like, I looked at my clock, at my watch, like, 9:10, and I was like, how are they gonna, like, how long is this movie? How are they gonna wrap? They're gonna have to wrap this up pretty quickly, or some major, you know, this was machina to, you know, wrap this all up. And I'm like, oh, when at the end, I was like, all right, part three. That makes a, that makes more sense. Because I'm like, I don't know how they're gonna finish this up in like 10 minutes. It turns out that I was right about 10 minutes, but not about them wrapping it all up. My only thing that kind of sours it is, although that's come out a lot this year, is apparently just, you know, apparently, like, the work conditions were super horrible about that. And, like, and apparently they're already, like, finishing up, I think, the third one. I think they have a date tentatively for the third one because it got delayed because of the writer's strike. So, you know, unfortunately, perhaps not the animator's strike.
Not yet.
Although, you know, if any of the stories, you know, that have come out this year about the animation industry in the US and Japan, that might not be too far behind in one or both countries. But yeah, I thought it was, despite maybe the sadness of how it was created, really well done. And I do look forward to the third one to see how they wrap it all up.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this.
And plus, it's far stronger than any of the, like, have you seen any of the weird live, not Spider-Man live action stuff that they're doing next year? Sony is apparently, like, doing all these Spider-Man movies that are not Spider-Man, like Kraven the Hunter and Miss Madam Web. And they apparently all look like Sony Spider-Man stuff. So they look pretty horrible.
So they just look jank?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I didn't know about that. Yeah. How interesting.
Yeah, apparently they're coming out with a Kraven Hunter, the movie. Because the new Spider-Man 2 game was apparently amazing. My brother played it and just gave it. My youngest brother gave it to my middle brother. And they both apparently have been loving the game. And it's gotten all good reviews and stuff. And they had Kraven the Hunter in that one. I saw a little bit of when James was playing it. And so, like, they're, like, clearly, like, ah, we've got to have a Kraven Hunter the movie because Kraven the Hunter was in that last Spider-Man game that did crazy good.
That's why it did good. Everyone was just playing it for that, for him.
And then the Madam Web movie is just, I've just heard, is, like, the trailer is amazingly odd. But, you know, that was my not anime cartoon.
Good choice. All right. I'm going to go with Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I really need to talk about it that much. Just because it's obvious, I guess, why it's on here. I checked. A few of us were, like, posting our, like, time spent on the game in the Discord. So I was at 160 plus hours for this one. This was just a game that absolutely absorbed me. It also saved me from COVID crisis because someone in my household had COVID at the time. So there was, like, we were isolating. So, like, I was just running away from reality by playing this game. And I did not get COVID. So it's also a preventative measure. Just tell the Food and Drug Administration about
it. Okay, like, don't get into, like, colloidal silver like things.
I've been inoculated because I played Tears of the Kingdom.
Or to Alex Jones.
And I, you know, I loved this game. I thought it was better than Breath of the Wild, which I didn't think was truly possible. And I just like the improvements that they made in it and the world building and the story. Everything was just so incredible. It like makes me emotional just thinking about this game. It was such an emotional story and I loved it so much. And it's definitely in my like top three Zelda games of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it was the game that everybody assumed was going to win Game of the Year till Baldur's Gate 3 came out. They're like, well, it's going to be Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And then, like, I think most people were like, all right, Baldur's Gate's a pretty, like, decent franchise. And, like, but nobody expected Baldur's Gate 3 to be just this, like, wow! But, I mean, up until that game came out, I feel like Tears of the Kingdom, pretty much everyone was like, all right, that's going to be the one that just, you know, does it.
And it's so interesting. I feel like I don't begrudge Baldur's Gate 3 from winning in any way at all. Like, I haven't played it, but it sounds incredible. But it's so interesting because, like, the games are so different from each other. They're like, oh, it's so hard to, like, be, like, best game, you know? Like, they're just very different. But for me, it was the best game.
No, that's fair. I mean, once again, James played it, really liked it. I just haven't had the time. Like I said, the only game I've really played other than, like, mobile games has been Fate Samurai Remnant. So, like, if I was smarter or cooler, I would have played Baldur's Gate 3 to have my comments on this. But, like I said, I'll probably play that next year after I get it for Christmas. I wanted to mention that a podcast that I found this year that I've really been enjoying and just listening to a bunch since they have like so many back episodes. Just been using it as something to listen to on my commute, which is Behind the Bastards. It's a podcast where the host with one guest, or sometimes two, but rotating guests. And they just look at someone horrible from history and how they're just a horrible person. And how they've, you know, either, you know, affected history and or modern life. And, you know, they have everything, you know, from historical people, like, you know, the person who, like, you know, founded Rhodesia and, like, you know, set up so much of, like, the model for European colonialism in Africa, to, you know, people modern day, like, you know, Ted Cruz.
Did you have any favorite episodes
so far? I'll mention Cecil Rhodes, who I mentioned was the founder of Rhodesia, and just like responsible for so much of, like, the shape of colonialism in Africa. Like, also, like, such a weird character, like things you wouldn't expect. Like, he was, like, super openly gay, but, like, just because he had so much money, he essentially could get away with it at the time. But also just, like, the amount of, like, effects that he's had in the world. Like, he's, like, mostly responsible for De Beers and, like, why diamonds aren't just, like, super common and inexpensive, and, like, how much of, like, modern, like, monopolies and oligarchies are just based on, like, the business plans that he made. Like, just, like, I mean, you know, you don't want to get into too much of, like, reliance on great man of history, but, like, if it wasn't him, it would probably have been somebody else. But, like, it's interesting. Also, for personal reasons, I don't want to get too much into it, but I've been fascinated by, like, some of their cult episodes, like, just, like, the life of L. Ron Hubbard and, like, what is it? Seventh Generation, some of the other, I've been finding those rather fascinating. And just, like, or for, like, someone a little more modern, I thought, like, their breakdown of Elon Musk was, like, an interesting insight into, like, why that dude is the way that he is. But, I don't know. If you know. Maybe it's just my misanthropic view of life and humanity that, like, I don't know, just interesting to see these people who have, you know, shaped the world by being utter dickbags. What they did a whole series that you might be interested in, Kate, just on, like, they usually pick, like, people, like, individual people, but they did, like, a whole, like, I forgot how many episodes, just on, like, modern policing and, like...
That sounds really depressing.
And, like, I will say this much, man, you quickly get a unique taste in your mouth when you're, like, learn how much the KKK and, like, the birth of policing was connected, and you're like, ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, it's not a, that sounds very fascinating, and I'm sure it's been eye-opening to to many people, so that, I mean, I'm glad they are tackling such topics.
It isn't, like, unless you're, like, one of those people who likes to listen to sad songs when they're depressed, probably not something you want to listen to. Like, there are times where I'm like, yeah, I'm not in the mood to listen to a Bahate Bastards episode. I think I'm gonna listen to something a little more upbeat, which might be my next thing. But, Kate, it's your turn.
So I think I want to call out the Critical Role Mighty Nein reunion episode, Echoes of the Solstice. I'm sure most of our listeners know that me and Al are both big Critical Role fans, but there was a special episode this year that was filmed live initially in London. I did not go see that, but the recorded version was released a couple months ago, and it was delightful. It was so great to have these characters back. I really thought everybody jumped right into character very well, and it was, when this was coming up, I was like, oh, am I going to see it in a different light since I've, you know, Campaign 2, which is what this is based on, you know, was a while ago, or way very far into Campaign 3. Like, is it all like rose-colored glasses? I'm like, we're gonna get back to this, and I'm gonna be like, oh, you know, like, it's fine. But no, I, like, loved it so much, and I might have loved it even more than I thought I would, simply because I like the new campaign, but it is not, like, absorbing me in the way that Campaign 2 did. So I was really excited to return to these characters.
Plus, it feels like they have a hook for another Mighty Nein reunion. That
comes... Oh, a big one! Yeah, and then also this particular special was very focused on one of my favorite characters in the story. And so, like, just great all around for me.
I will mention, I won't go into any spoilers, but or even for Kate, but they did talk quite a bit about it in the last Four-Sided Dive as well.
Might have to listen to that. I'm looking forward to there feels like they will definitely do at least one more special. I don't know, real indication of when that will be, but I think that's going to be great too. So, but I was just so, so happy. I feel like the whole time I was watching, I just had, like, this great big grin on my face because it was just so much fun.
I did find it, I will spoil one minor thing. That it was, apparently they did get fined for that because they went over time, and then they had to, like, pay Wembley Stadium
some probably exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah, for, like, going over the time they were allotted, because they, like, had to be out of there by 11, but they went over by, like, I don't know, I forgot, like, 12 minutes or something, which, you know, counted, like, another half an hour, another hour. And so they're like, yeah, we got fine, but it was worth it.
It was so good. It was so good.
My last one that I wanted to mention is a little different than, like, things, I think. But I discovered a musician, Tim Minchin. He's, like, an Australian, comedic musician, and I, like, stumbled upon, like, one of his songs and really liked it, and just, like, went down a rabbit hole of, like, just discovering his, like, kind of irrelevant but really sometimes you know, very, sometimes very silly, sometimes very poignant musical pieces. People might know him for, like, he did, he's done like one or two Australian TV series now. He did all the music for the Matilda musical and the Groundhog's Day musical. So I think a lot of people know him from that more than anything else. I don't know. I just, he's very Australian. So he'll, like, you know, he'll just toss in the C word, like,
I see,
like an Australian one. Or, you know, other curse words. You know, truly showing that he has not forgotten his Australian roots. Obviously, you know, when he's doing, like, the Matilda musical, you know, it's not C-word bound. This is funny. Like, apparently my roommate doesn't like when, like, songs change musical style or, like, beat in the middle of the songs, but I feel like, actually, I don't mind that. Like, I feel like a lot of good Paul Simon songs do that. And he does that a lot well for, like, comedic effect, where, like, he kind of, like, builds up the joke in one musical style and then the joke hits in the other musical style. The song that, like, I first really connected with in this is a song for Phil Doust, which essentially, if there's an Australian comic festival called the Edinburgh Fringe Fest, where, like, a lot of, like, comedians debuted, and, like, he mostly up until that point, like, I was just, like, playing in cover bands and, like, little, like, underground bars, and he, like, tried to make his first big debut at the Edinburgh Fringe Fest, where he apparently caught on, but, like, this one reviewer from The Guardian, like, savagely said, like, this guy should just give up, he's not funny, just, like, savage review. And so he basically waited, like, years until he was popular, and then just wrote this song just, like,
about that review.
Yes. And I was like, all right, that level of bitterness and, like, dedication to revenge, you got me, friend. And then I listened to his song. I'm like, oh, that isn't a one-hit thing. Like, you have a lot of, like, not all of your songs are just bitter review.
Were you disappointed a little bit, Al?
What do you call it? Two other songs I just figured I'd highlight. One is Storm, which is a nine minute beat poem about a party that he went to, hosted by some friends. And the other one that I really like is a song called Prejudice, that I will not say anything about, because if I tell you the premise of the song, as I described before, it's in one beat and then the other beat. And if I spoil it, it hits better if you don't know what's gonna come. But I really thought it was very amusing.
Okay, I wanted to mention, I feel like I have to mention it, even though it's, like, on everybody's list, but I have to mention it for a very specific reason, which is Barbie.
Mm.
The Barbie movie, and obviously, huge hit. I don't think I need to talk about this movie.
I assume you did not do the combo.
I did not. As I noted to other people, I don't need to see movies about men being terrible and doing terrible things to the world, because we live that. And that's a biopic, so it's like, we actually lived it. I mean, I didn't live then, but, like, I live in the fallout now of your choices, sir. Like, so I don't need to be reminded of that. But I wanted to pick Barbie. I feel like I had to put it on this list simply because I saw it in the theaters twice, and after that happened, I was trying to remember the last time I saw a movie in the theater twice. and I couldn't actually recall when that was. I truly don't know the last time that I, like, got to do that, and it was such a, like, being able to see movies in the theater is something I really value and really love, but I typically just don't have the time to see them more than once, and the fact that I did go out of my way to do this, I think, just sort of speaks to the movie itself. And I absolutely just had to see the Ken dance sequence second time. There was just no universe in which I could keep going in my life without it. So it was a phenomenal movie, as everyone has already noted, in a myriad of ways, and I absolutely recommend it, and I deeply love it.
Actually, I just thought of one other one, so we can have a little more and you can get all your five in. This will be quick, but I really enjoyed the Shinkiro music video that Howlive put out. It was a collaboration between Howlive English and Howlive Japan. It had my favorite VTuber, Hoshino Marine, and the most popular VTuber in the world, Garagura. And they did like a city pop, because both of them are both big city pop fans. So they did like a very city pop style animated music video for it that has like a 80s anime style. And it's just a good song. It's a cute little like love ballad with, you know, if you like city pop music, which is like definitely had a resurgence recently, and like a nostalgic animation style, and it's just beautiful. Like, they clearly threw their fucking Hololive money at like animating this like amazingly well. You know, it's on the YouTubes, you can watch it for free. I'm sure if you're like a VTuber person, you know about it, but if you're just like a city pop person, or maybe just like anime from the like the 80s, it's like, yeah, you watch it and you don't have to go down the rest of the VTuber rabbit hole when you're like, that was a nice video.
I feel like I've slowly learned things about VTubers, like just osmosis from my home.
And the people that you interact with.
Yeah, so.
I would suggest even Kate would watch it, just because like it's like 4 or 5 minutes and like, all right, that was a cute song. And that was some nice animation. It's that pirate girl and that shark one that I've seen a few times.
So my next pick is a retrospective exhibition I went to. It was called Underground Images, A History. And it was a sort of overview of subway posters from the School of Visual Arts, which is a art school here in New York City, and they have a yearly subway poster series called Art Is. So I feel like if you live in the city, you've seen these posters at least, you know, in passing. And so they do new ones every year, and they get like artists from all over the globe to do this, usually alumni at the school, things like that. And so they actually put together this really fantastic exhibit of posters from over the years. They had video of some of the more famous artists talking about like the process of it and like whatever they created, and they basically have free reign on whatever they want to do. Like, that was sort of the point of the series, is to like let the artists interpret it any way that they want to, and that then, you know, is advertising for the school itself. So the actual exhibition was like, you know, like had subway tile, and it, you know, they tried to like sort of imitate what it like is like to see these posters in real life. So that was really cool. They had lots of like sketches and in progress runs. There's ones that were originally 3D that were then photographed for the poster, and they had one of the 3D models that they had used, and it was really cool. And it also had, one of the videos was of Milton Glaser, who is a SVA. He was a teacher there for many, many years, but he's also a very famous famous designer. If you know him for anything, actually probably everyone knows him. You just don't know it. He is the designer of the I Love New York logo. So he was talking, he's done a bunch of these posters. So they actually had, he's passed away a couple of years ago. So they actually had him in one of the videos, like talking about a bunch of the posters that he had made. So it was really cool. And I don't know about this particular exhibition of it, but I do know that SVA has toured the posters across the country before. So if that's something you're interested in, you can look it up, and they, you know, might be having something next year touring the U.S. with this exhibition. It was really great. And also it reminded me, like, I don't know I can't remember the last time I went to an exhibition, certainly before the pandemic started. So this really was a great experience, and it made me want to go to more. So I have a feeling that I'll be going to a lot more exhibitions next year.
I just wanted to, another thing that I didn't get around to, but I hope to eventually, is I did buy the Cyberpunk Red TTRPG book, but it's so heavy. It's such a thick book that it would be best if I could just put it in my bag. I should just bring it in my bag, even though it's so heavy, and just because I could read it easily on my commute, but it's just so heavy that I don't want to put it in my bag. It's the one thing that's really stopping me from reading that and then trying it out at a game in our little group. But I have the book. I really was playing the Cyberpunk video game and then watching Edgerunners and then Kate and other people being like, it would be cool to play the actual TTRPG. I'm like, I bought the book and I just haven't gotten around to I've flipped through about a third of it, but I really just need to sit down and finish the book and play a little of that. That's also, this is anime related, but I just didn't know where else to bring it up. But I was like, man, I found Aeon of Horus, who's basically just a Index Light, is an Index Lore channel that's all just about Index Lore. He just does weekly videos that are just breaking down and going into the lore of Index videos. And I'm like, that's amazing that that can be done. But
I guess that's not anime. It's anime adjacent. So I guess I'll let you count that as, so this is something you've been watching.
Yes, because I was like, my God, someone who's actually as interested in Index lore as I am. What a crazy person. How's
he allowed maybe to be? It's you from the future.
Maybe. I don't know how I gained a British, I guess I really perfected my British accent. It's pretty impressive. Or maybe AI is so good in the future that I speak and then I just put it into a thing that just...
That guy is your HoloLive.
Wow. Impressive. Impressive me from the future and British accenting device from the future.
Have you learned anything?
I mean, yes, but...
No, I mean, I'm not asking you to tell me what those things are. But let me be very clear.
But we will not go down I learned so much. Learned so much about the imaginary number space above Academy City and how that ties into the plans of Aleister Crowley.
This is my fault. It's my own fault.
I mean, I could go into detail about any of that.
No, that was plenty. Thank you very much, Al. We so appreciate your attention to detail.
Cool, 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 cool.
I was asking that more to see if he really knows more than you do about it.
Oh yeah, yeah, because he can read Japanese, so he's read the Japanese books. So he's down deep in the Index, and he's sometimes we'll bring up interviews and stuff like that. So he's neck deep in that sweet, sweet Index lore.
Impressive. All right, so my last thing, I feel like I saved it for last because it is so pure. And it brings so much joy, which is the most recent season of The Great British Bake Show. It was so good. It was the best because we have a new host, and thank God. And so that has made it an even better season than usual. And also, I thought that they really went back to basics a little bit more on the challenges in this season, which is exactly what we wanted. We don't need wild and crazy, really weird stuff. We just want to see lovely people fake things and succeed. That's what we want. And find friendship with each other. And I don't want to spoil the seasonal ending, but, like, I got everything I wanted. My favorite person won. And, like, and they had a really great story arc. And, yeah. And I feel like if you know me well enough, and you haven't actually seen it, because I think you, then you would know who won. And, like, but I feel like you should be able to figure out who my favorite character was. Character. They're not characters. They're real people. But it's also a show. So they're characters. I think it would have been, like, very, I think you could have picked out who was going to be my favorite pretty easily. But yeah. Oh, it was so good and just so pure. Can't wait for next year. All right. Anything else?
No.
All right. That wraps up our favorite things from 2023. As Al mentioned, we will be talking about anime and manga. Probably just anime. I don't know. Whatever. We'll find out what we'll talk about in January.
If nothing else, we'll probably do like our top five favorite series, favorite characters, favorite openings, maybe some other character categories.
If you have category suggestions, open to that as well. And I can't wait to hear what everybody else's favorites were. I'm sure there'll be some surprises in there. And I did want to mention before we sign off for the year that I will be in Japan for a couple of weeks here at the end of the year. I will be going to Comiket. I have my tickets. So I don't know how much I'm going to talk about that on the Discord or if I'm going to talk about it on the podcast. I really am unable to make more decisions this year than I have already made, so I don't know. But I'm sure you'll hear about it at some future date. So everybody have a great new year, and we will see you in January.
Yay! Bye, guys.